Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. You know, I do a lot of giveaways, CDs, books. Recently, I gave away a Whole Foods gift card, an iTunes certificate. Somebody recently got a signed copy of artistic David Russell's illustrative book, Enchanters. So you really want to follow at Joy Keys and become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. But today we're talking about a very important topic, alcoholism. Alcoholism, addiction. April is Alcohol Awareness Month. And as you know, I love to learn about all types of topics and inform others about these topics, because sometimes we kind of get lax when we think we might know something, but we may not. So I have two wonderful professionals who know a lot more than I do about this topic. The first one is Robert Lindsay. He's the president and CEO of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. That was founded in 1944 by Marty Mann, the first woman to get sober at Alcoholics Anonymous, and is dedicated to increasing public awareness and understanding of the disease of alcoholism and drug dependence. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for the opportunity to be on the call today.
Thank you so much for calling in. My second guest is Shirley McKell, and she is the Director of Certification and Education at NADAC. NADAC is the Association for Addiction Professionals and has more than 37 years' experience working with individuals with co-occurring disorders. In addition to establishing a certification system in her home state of South Carolina, McKell also played a significant role in establishing faith-based training initiatives and treatment centers in 7 churches throughout the state. Good morning, Shirley.
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you so much. We kind of had a last minute with Shirley here, but I really appreciate you taking the time to call in this morning. I think it's so important just to get the awareness out about this problem. I've actually had different authors on where they talk about alcoholism and how it affects families and individuals and at a greater extent the communities. So I think this is really important to talk about today. I'm going to start off with Shirley here, and let's just talk about this issue. Well, if I drink a beer, is that as bad as a cooler? Is that as bad as hard liquor? I threw down some scotch. I mean, it was only like 2 or 3 coolers. Is there a difference between these three, you know, types of alcohol?
In terms of the addictive properties, there really isn't. It depends on the amount that you're drinking, the frequency of the use of the alcoholic beverage. And also, when you're looking at age, you're looking at gender, there's so many differentials when you consider the issue of dependence. Of course, there's also an issue for youth where we try not to identify them as abusers, but experimenters in a sense. But the reality is when you're drinking consistently is where the problem is, no matter what the drink is, it can create a problem.
Now, Robert, I mean, if I have a drink, you know, once a day at dinner time, maybe a glass of wine, because, you know, wine is supposed to be good for cardiovascular. I even remember my grandfather, he lived to about 90, and his doctor told him, you know, get some wine because he had some cardiovascular issues and kind of get things going. I mean, is that okay, Robert, for me to drink wine with my dinner every night? Or if I drink 5 glasses of wine on Saturday, what's the difference?
Well, I think that, first of all, plain and simple for your listeners, the most important piece to understand is that alcoholism and addiction is a chronic, progressive disease that is genetically predisposed. Over 15 million people in this country are addicted to alcohol alone. So the real question is not how much, how often, etc. The real question is, what happens when I drink? And if it begins to cause problems for me personally, financially, in relationships, at work, for my health, then it's time to talk to a professional who is specifically trained and successfully experienced in helping people deal with alcoholism and alcohol-related problems.
Now, you said a key point there. You mentioned genetics, and that's a question I definitely want to bring up. Who is at risk, Robert, for becoming an alcohol addict in terms of age, gender, ethnicity? Who's at risk?
Well, I mean, certainly, as Shirley said, there's a lot of variables at play here. But one of the things that's very important for everyone to understand is that alcoholism is a chronic disease like other chronic illnesses, heart disease, diabetes, and others. And that genetic predisposition is very much a factor in play. So that if, in fact, you come from a family history with alcoholism, like other chronic illnesses, you are more likely to develop an alcoholism problem in the future. And that is that biochemically, your body responds differently to the effects of alcohol than someone else. So the most important risk factor is family history.
Now, Shirley, when someone comes in, and I mean, you've dealt with people for 37, almost 40 years, do they come in willingly? I mean, what is the resistance, and why does it take them so long to come to a professional to talk about this matter?
I'm not certain that anyone comes in willingly for treatment, and I'm not meaning that in a negative way. Most persons are encouraged by family members, by employers, students with school issues. Some kids, are, especially youth these days, are encouraged by their churches or by other factors in their community. So when we talk about willingness for treatment, the issue is really by the time the person has gone through the assessment process, there is a willingness at that moment for them to engage in therapeutic interventions. Most people assume the willingness because they come in voluntarily, they're not shackled or, you know, brought in handcuffs. But the reality really is that there is a factor for all of us to engage in a therapeutic process that's usually the impetus of a family or some other entity that's saying to us, we see a problem, we identify that there's something going wrong within the family, and so then the person may decide at that point to engage in therapeutic interventions. As Robert said, that's one of the biggest issues that we have is encouraging people to be aware of the symptomology of alcoholism in particular so that they can encourage those persons to come in for help.
Now, Robert, what are some of the signs that a family or friend should look out for in terms of drinking? Because I remember I had a friend who I ended up finding out they were alcoholic, but they swore they weren't because they're like, I don't drink every day. Like, they would go to work, they'd be fine, you know, during the week. But on the weekend, oh, my God, they would have blackouts. One time they came by my house, and I had to, like, walk them back out. They didn't even remember coming to my house. So I know that definitely was a big sign. But what are some smaller signs, Robert, that people should look out for if there's a loved one or friend or family that they're close to?
Well, I think that, first of all, one of the things that I wanted to emphasize is that you can find a lot of the resources and information that we're talking about here on our website at ncadd.org. And it is a terrific resource for people to find information about signs and symptoms. What do I do as a friend or a family member? But one of the things that's real important for family and friends to understand, and that is that if at any point you are concerned about a friend or a family member, make sure that you get information about the nature of alcoholism and addiction, how it's impacting and affecting the individual, how it's impacting and affecting you as a family member or a friend. And once you've done that, then you can begin to figure out how can we help. I think that too frequently, friends and family members try to go this on their own or hope that it will just get better magically or hope that it will just go away. But the reality is that, again, chronic progressive means that no matter where it is today, it will get worse later. So those symptoms include many, many different issues. But again, to make it simple, the issue is if someone's drinking is negatively affecting their life and the lives of the people around them, it is time to talk to somebody specifically trained and successfully experienced in dealing with alcoholism.
Well, Shirley, I want to bring you in at that point because since we keep mentioning that it is a chronic illness, how long, I mean, as a professional, is there a sense of burnout sometimes in dealing with someone who has addiction because it's a constant, they constantly maybe have to, you know, come check in with you. You may think they have beat, you know, the situation temporarily, but then it's going to rear its head again. How does a professional, I'm trying to say, maintain their own balance in dealing with the client, you know, that, you know, you may become attached to and they come see you all the time and you're just hoping, oh, they're really going to do it this time, and then they don't. How does a professional deal with that?
think one of the things that we've learned over the years in addictions practice is we never know when is the time, when is the time that all of the information, all of the interventions, all of the efforts the counselor and the client put into their therapeutic processes will click or will catch. And so to say that a person may come in one or two times for treatment and they're failing, quote-unquote, the treatment is not necessarily true. It may take twice, once, sometimes for an individual. It may take six or seven times. But the clinician never, ironically enough, this is a heart work that we do. And so it's not that the clinician becomes discouraged. The impact of the disease, because it is a relapsing disease, and that is something that people don't understand, is that because it is prone for persons to relapse, that we have to have patience, we have to have tenacity, we have to pursue sometimes consistently the individual to continue their engagement in treatment. And so I don't know of any clinician who loses a heart for the patient or for the individual who comes into care. We normally will pursue them until they get to the point where they have decided themselves, and I say themselves, and I'll explain why in a moment, that this is not what they choose to do. The reality is that most persons are not aware until such time that they've gone through their own bottom, so to speak, and that's the term that Alcoholics Anonymous uses, until they've gone through their own bottom, that they need to engage completely and thoroughly in the therapeutic process. So we're always available.
Well, Charlotte, let me just mention that one of the things that your organization does and help, the resiliency of the professional is the certification program. You guys have an addiction counselor level 1, 2, a master addiction counselor. Talk to the audience a little bit about how, if someone's interested in their professional, how they can go about getting a certification. Is it just going to your website, which is naadac.org? Again, naadac.org. Just talk to us about the certification process.
They can click on the certification link at the top of that page and find all of the information about all of the levels of credentials you mentioned. Aside from that, within each state, it is required that you become certified or licensed, I think about 5 years ago, that mandate was within each state, that you become certified or licensed to practice within that state as well. And so persons who really are interested in this profession need to find out as much about educational requirements, about practice requirements, about their own, and I hate to bring this up, but their own length of sobriety in order for them to practice within their state as well. There's some states who mandate that you have to be sober for 5 years. There are others who mandate only a 2-year period. And so those are really relevant factors that you need to consider as you're looking to become a professional. The other thing,
Robert,
that really matters.
Let me just bring, Shirley, I'm sorry. Let me just interrupt. I want to bring Robert in talking about that because, Robert, your organization has the WAR program, and I think it was mentioned that they have to be sober for 2 years. Is that correct, or Robert?
Yeah, I certainly want to talk about ROAR, but one of the things that I want to emphasize that's very important for everyone to understand is that today we estimate as many as 10 million people are living a life in recovery from alcoholism and addiction. You know, and as much as we talk about how difficult and challenging this is, the reality is I've spent my entire career working in this field, and I can tell you and everyone else stories all day long of the miracle of recovery. And the impact and effect that it has on individuals and family members. It is an absolute privilege to have the opportunity to work in this field. Difficult, challenging, absolutely, but the rewards are amazing because the lives.
Well, Robert, let me just say, according to the CDC, 17% of men and about 8% of women will meet the criteria for alcohol dependence at some point in their lives. 17% of men. So let me just real quick, why men? It seems the number is higher for men. Do men have more of a problem with alcoholism than women, or is that
that number? Certainly, traditionally, that's been true. But if you would have looked at those numbers back 10 or 15 years ago, the split would have been even more dramatic. The reality is that the way that women are drinking, especially young women, has changed dramatically over the last 10, 15 years. And the end result is that we are seeing more and more convergence in terms of drinking patterns for women and for men, especially young women. And it's very, very concerning across the board.
I think you also mentioned, they also mentioned that almost 8% of pregnant women are using alcohol. I mean, do you guys, surely when you people come in, I mean, alcohol, was it alcohol fetal syndrome? And how that affects, and then is that a child who is susceptible or at risk for becoming an alcoholic themselves if the mother drank during pregnancy?
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. I think more too, women are being reported in terms of their use, misuse of alcohol and other chemicals today. 10, 15 years ago, there were not as many being reported coming into the
truth.
And having worked directly with across the United States with patients, clients, many of the women were being protected by their families because they saw the shame in the reporting of women.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was easier for a man to walk in and say that he had a problem than for a woman to, because of the shame it brought upon the family. And so
a lot of
the women were being kept at home and not receiving the treatment. As Robert said earlier, that's a danger. Because in attempting to resolve that issue on a family level, not having the professionals involved created more problems for women. So, at, 15 years ago, more women were reporting their need for treatment than before. So we see the upswing in the amount of women who are now in treatment, and their numbers are increasing in terms of reporting.
Well, I want to mention Robert's phone number for his organization, the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, 1-800-622-2255. Again, 1-800-622-2255. And also you can go to their website, ncadd.org, and enter your zip code, and you can identify an affiliate in your state. I mean, it's not just in one location. This is a national, both these organizations are national in helping individuals and helping professionals. I want to mention, Robert, on your website, you're also dealing with drug dependency, so not just alcohol, even though we're focusing on alcohol today, but also drug dependency. What's the program that's going on right now in terms of young people? Because that's a big problem on college campuses and just young people, even in high school age, drinking too much. What programs do you have to help them out?
Well, I think that, first of all, the reason that we're emphasizing alcohol today is that, as you mentioned in your introduction, April is National Alcohol Awareness Month, and Alcohol Awareness Month is an event that we started over 26 years ago as a means of really just trying to raise the public's awareness and understanding of alcohol, alcoholism, and recovery. And as you said earlier as well, we have a national network of affiliates scattered across the country that are available as a trained resource for people near them in their communities. And last year, over 713,000 people called us and our affiliates looking for help. One of the things that we're particularly focused on during this Alcohol Awareness Month is the issue of underage drinking. And one of the things, the reasons that we're so concerned about it, is that last year, again, we estimate over 6,500 kids under the age of 21 died from alcohol-related causes. Now, most of the public would assume that that's almost all drinking and driving related. And although that is a significant number, it isn't even half of the number of deaths that are alcohol-related for young people.
Mm-hmm.
The others are accidents, falls, fires, homicides, suicides, and alcohol overdose. So,
yeah, I think most people think just about cars and driving and going to the bar and, having a designated driver. They're not thinking about these other incidents that you mentioned, like falling or fires, or because when you're drinking, it affects your thinking processes. One of the things you have on your website is a test that they can do, a self-test for teenagers. And questions such as, do you use alcohol or other drugs to build self-confidence? Have you ever missed school due to alcohol? Have you started hanging out with heavy drinking or drug user crowd? Do you feel more at ease on a date when drinking or using other drugs? I remember when one time I went on a date, and it was the first date I went on with a guy, and he was drunk the first date.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? I was like, how? We didn't even get started. And he was, oh, no, I was with some people, and we were talking, and we were celebrating, and And I had never seen them drunk. So it was like, whoa, this is weird. But come to find out, the person did have a drinking problem, if your ladies, if you're listening and the guy asks you out on the first date and they're drunk, you might want to take a step back and give them some time to deal with that issue.
We have learned a great deal over the last number of decades about the way that alcohol affects the body in terms of development in particular. And one of the specific reasons that the drinking age was raised to 21, because we found that, again, the biochemical impact and effect on the brain and on development with young people in particular puts them at great risk. And we found that for young people who begin drinking at the age of 15, they are 6 to 7 times more likely to develop a future alcohol problem than those who wait till age 21. That's a dramatic difference.
Wow. Well, also it affects men in terms of their reproduction organs, women in terms of both sexes in terms of the liver, brain functioning. I want to mention, Shirley, I'll bring you in the conversation, talk about the conference you have for the professionals. You have a conference coming up in August of 2012.
Right.
Do you have any information? Can you tell the audience about that?
We do have that listed also on our website. We'd love to have anyone and everyone to participate in that conference. We have an annual conference and have for the last 27 years. The intent for that conference is to educate and inform our professionals, but also family members and others in the community about the impact and effect of alcoholism and drug addiction. Also about the profession itself, hours gained at that conference are permitted in every state towards a person's credentialing and recredentialing. It also gives the opportunity for persons to share with their peers and to become engaged and ask questions. What's different in my state than your state? What's happening in your state than this difference in my state? And especially now, looking towards the Affordable Care Act, what is happening in our states that may impact legislative requirements that will affect our profession? So we do offer a milieu of engaging topics that persons can sign up for, and it's reasonable. It's in a great city, so
it's
we're hoping that a lot of people,
yeah,
lots to do downtown. So we're hoping that people will engage.
Shirley, one of the things you mentioned is about the insurance and the changes, and this is a real problem because I know with a lot of insurance plans, in terms of mental health services, it's very limited. Maybe a person can only go to 30 sessions, 20 sessions in a year. The copayment could be $25. Robert, do you have any resources with the organization to help people with that type of issue in terms of paying for copayments or getting them free mental health services? Because that's a really big issue.
Without question, it's a very important issue, but plain and simple, insurance pays for the health consequences of someone's alcoholism or addiction, whether that be the individual or the family. And the family utilizes health insurance twice as much as the general public because of the consequences of living with someone's alcoholism. So gaining access to care utilizing health insurance is extremely important. And as Shirley mentioned before, the Affordable Health Care Act, along with the passage of the parity bill a couple of years ago, is really all about expanding people's access to treatment services specifically for alcoholism, addiction, and recovery. And again, the reason I emphasize it is that insurance pays for the gastritis, pancreatitis, broken arms, legs, cirrhosis, fatty liver, endlessly. It's time to invest those dollars in the solution, and that's treatment, and that's recovery.
That's right.
And it's prevention in a sense, too, because before somebody gets to that point, I mean, I think you both can agree that there could be a moment, it's a tipping point. You don't know what the catalyst is that sends somebody over the edge. Because everybody that comes from, say, a family who has alcoholism doesn't necessarily become alcoholic. You guys can both agree on that, correct?
Well, it's true. But again, as we mentioned earlier, the risk is greater if anybody has a family history. And again, I think that the key here is that what we want to do is to make sure that if anybody has any question about their own alcohol or drug use, that of a friend or a family member, it's time to talk to somebody specifically trained and successfully experienced. I've said that several times, and I want to emphasize why. And that is that the great majority of people that are physicians, psychiatrists, social workers, mental health professionals, clergy, and others, that all of us rely on when we need help for ourselves or a friend or a family member. The great majority of them have absolutely no training and, in many cases, no successful experience in dealing with alcoholism and addiction. So that as a person who has any question it is critically important that you get to the right people to provide help to you and to your family. And certainly NCADD and our national network of affiliates has done that for decades and has been the start point for millions of individuals and families' recovery. NADAC, in terms of its work in certifying individuals to say these are people specifically trained and successfully experienced, are extremely important for people to understand.
Well, Robert, I think that's the key point is getting help with professionals, as you mentioned, and that's why I wanted to have both of you guys on the show today. I really want to thank you. We're kind of out of time right now for coming on the show this morning and sharing your knowledge. Shirley and Robert, thank you so much for coming on. I want to encourage the listeners to check out both their websites, NADAC, NAADAC.org. That's the Association for Addiction Professionals. They also have a great bookstore on there. They have a career center. And as I mentioned earlier, Shirley talked about the certification process and conferences. And also check out Robert's organization. Robert Lindsay, the president and CEO of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. Their website is ncadd.org. They have lots of wonderful links for parents, for youth, for people in recovery, tests that you can do for yourself if you're a teenager, you're an adult. Please check out those programs. Also, let me just mention, Robert, that your 1-800 number again is 1-800-622-2255. And reach out to them because, again, as he mentioned several times in his show, you may think that you can get over it by yourself or maybe go and talk to a church pastor or a friend, you know, but really seek out the professional, and these two organizations can help you do that. Again, thank you so much, Robert and Shirley, for coming on this morning.
Thank you.
Thrilled to be
here.
Thank
you, Robert.
Appreciate it. Thanks very much, Joy.
Okay, you both have a wonderful Saturday.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show today. Again, April is Alcohol Awareness Month, and I think you probably know somebody, all of us do, who may have an alcohol problem, and maybe you don't want to approach them. I know the person who has the problem or issue, there's a shame, you know, and why are they drinking? There's so many reasons. People are depressed. People have been molested. It's a depressant. I mean, alcohol is a depressant. It's not an upper, so it can make your problem worse. If you have a problem with depression and you go drinking, you're going to be even more depressed. So please, please reach out to these organizations and get help for yourself. Or just mention it to somebody. You know, you can't force somebody to go get help until they're ready. But thank you so much for listening this morning. You can follow me on Twitter.com/JoyKeys. And you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Next week, we're going to be talking about autism because April is also Autism Awareness Month. And later in the month, on the 21st, wonderful jazz singer Catherine Russell, because it's Jazz Appreciation Month. I try to get everything in here. I do the best I can. Thank you so much for getting past 84,000 downloads of the show. So I hope you have a wonderful Saturday. And again, thank you for supporting the show today. Thank you so much. Have a great week.